Passage 2.
When I first went to London as a student, I sat alone during parties with my glass of wine. I hoped people would think that I was having great thoughts and that someone might come up to me and say, "Excuse me, I hope you won't mind my coming up to you like this. I don't want to interrupt your thoughts. But really, you're the only interesting-looking person in the room. May I talk to you?" It never happened. Here is some advice if you would like to be a good conversationalist. Be an attentive listener. Encourage others to talk about themselves. To be interesting, be interested. Ask questions that other people will enjoy answering. Encourage them to talk about themselves and what they have done. Remember that the people you are talking to are 100 times more interested in themselves and their problems than they are in you and your problems. A person's toothache means more to that person than a famine in Africa which kills 1 million people. A pain in one's arm interests one more than 40 earthquakes in America. Think of that the next time you start a conversation. Diogenes, the Greek philosopher who is supposed to have lived in a barrel, said, "The reason why we have 2 ears and only 1 mouth is so that we may listen more and talk less."
Questions 29 to 31 are based on the passage you have just heard.
Question 29. What happened to the speaker at parties? Question 30. Why should we encourage others to talk about themselves in order to be good conversationalists? Question 31. What can we learn from what the Greek philosopher said?
Passage 3.
An American study found, on average, a child watches between 4 and 5 hours of television each weekday and 10 hours on Saturday and Sunday. It was also noted that a typical child watches 25,000 hours of television before his or her 18th birthday. In the life of children, watching television is a significant sensory experience. Many children easily spend more time with the box than they do with any other form of entertainment. Each year, children read less and less and watch television more and more. In fact, Americans of all ages watch more television each year. The typical child sits in front of the television about 4 hours a day, and for children in lower socioeconomic families, the amount of time thus spent is even greater. In either case, the child spends more time with TV than he or she spends talking to parents, playing with peers, attending school, or reading books. TV time appropriates family time, play time, and the reading time that could promote language development. Watching TV is a passive event. Children and adults remain completely immobile while viewing the box. Most viewing experiences, at least among Americans, are both quiet and non-interactive. All attention is given to the images. Just like the operating room light, television creates an environment that attacks and beats the child. He can respond to it only by bringing into play his shutdown mechanism, and thus becomes more passive. Children are often hooked. A highly active child will remain inactive while watching TV, because that is what the medium requires. Tomorrow, we shall talk about violence on TV and its effects on children.
Questions 32 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard.
Question 32. What did the study measure? Question 33. According to the speaker, what are most viewing experiences for a child? Question 34. What does the speaker compare television to in her speech? Question 35. How will the lecture change in its focus the next day?
Section C. Now listen to the passage.
In recent years, many countries of the world have been faced with the problem of how to make their workers more productive. Some experts claim the answer is to make jobs more varied. But do more varied jobs lead to greater productivity? There is evidence to suggest that while variety certainly makes the worker's life more enjoyable, it does not actually make him work harder. As far as increasing productivity is concerned, the variety is not an important factor. Other experts feel that giving the worker freedom to do his job in his own way is important, and there is no doubt that this is true. The problem is that this kind of freedom cannot easily be given in the modern factory, with its complicated machinery, which must be used in a fixed way. Thus, while freedom of choice may be important, there is usually very little that can be done to create it. Another important consideration is how much each worker contributes to the product he is making. In most factories, the worker sees only a small part of the product. Some car factories are now experimenting with having many small production lines rather than one large one, so that each worker contributes more to the production of the cars on his line. It would seem that not only is the degree of workers' contribution an important factor, but it is also one we can do something about.
Now the passage will be read again.
In recent years, many countries of the world have been faced with the problem of how to make their workers more productive. Some experts claim the answer is to make jobs more varied. But do more varied jobs lead to greater productivity? There is evidence to suggest that while variety certainly makes the worker's life more enjoyable, it does not actually make him work harder. As far as increasing productivity is concerned, the variety is not an important factor. Other experts feel that giving the worker freedom to do his job in his own way is important, and there is no doubt that this is true. The problem is that this kind of freedom cannot easily be given in the modern factory with its complicated machinery, which must be used in a fixed way. Thus, while freedom of choice may be important, there is usually very little that can be done to create it. Another important consideration is how much each worker contributes to the product he is making. In most factories, the worker sees only a small part of the product. Some car factories are now experimenting with having many small production lines rather than one large one. So that each worker contributes more to the production of the cars on his line. It would seem that not only is the degree of workers' contribution an important factor, but it is also one we can do something about.
Now the passage will be read for the third time.
In recent years, many countries of the world have been faced with the problem of how to make their workers more productive. Some experts claim the answer is to make jobs more varied. But do more varied jobs lead to greater productivity? There is evidence to suggest that while variety certainly makes the worker's life more enjoyable, it does not actually make him work harder. As far as increasing productivity is concerned, the variety is not an important factor. Other experts feel that giving the worker freedom to do his job in his own way is important, and there is no doubt that this is true. The problem is that this kind of freedom cannot easily be given in the modern factory, with its complicated machinery, which must be used in a fixed way. Thus, while freedom of choice may be important, there is usually very little that can be done to create it. Another important consideration is how much each worker contributes to the product he is making. In most factories, the worker sees only a small part of the product. Some car factories are now experimenting with having many small production lines rather than one large one, so that each worker contributes more to the production of the cars on his line. It would seem that not only is the degree of workers' contribution an important factor, but it is also one we can do something about.
This is the end of listening comprehension.
College English Test, Band 4.
Model Test 8.
Part 3. Listening Comprehension.
Section A.
Question 11. I forgot to bring paper and a pencil to take notes with in class.
That's all right. I have enough for both of us.
What will the woman most probably do next?
Question 12. I heard Peter has been to an interview today. How did it go?
Oh, if he had just relaxed, he would have done fine.
What can we learn about Peter? Question 13. Let's stop and look at this furniture, Billy. Have you ever seen more beautiful sofas?
Quite often, and for much less money, too.
What does the man think of the sofas?
Question 14. I'm terribly sorry I'm late, dear. I had a meeting at the office.
That's okay. I arrived here only a moment ago because my car broke down, and I walked all the way down here.
Why did the man arrive late? Question 15. Hi, Jane. Sorry to take you away from the kitchen, but it seems as if something has come up. Stacy's off to New York, so do you know who might replace her?
That's a tough one, but I'll certainly keep an eye out for someone.
Where does the conversation most probably take place?
Question 16. What shall we do this weekend? Go to the beach, go to the mountains, or stay home?
I don't think I can handle the crowds and the driving. Let's stay here and relax.
Why isn't the man willing to go out?
Question 17. Shall I put this equipment away now that you've finished with the lab work?
Not yet, please.
What will the man probably do? Question 18. Let's have a festival at the beginning of the school year to raise some money for the club.
Good. That will get the ball rolling.
What does the woman mean?
Now you'll hear two long conversations.
Conversation 1.
So, what is your biology project about?
It is about microorganisms that live by chemosynthesis.
What's chemosynthesis?
Well, it's pretty complicated. You know how most life on Earth depends either directly or indirectly on sunlight.
You mean like plants get energy directly from sunlight, and animals eat plants, so they depend indirectly on sunlight?
Right. But down on the ocean floor, there is no sunlight. In some places, though, there are hydrothermal vents, which are small cracks on the ocean floor. And these vents release heat and minerals from the inside of the earth into the seawater. And all along the vents, there are these unusual microorganisms. They are called archaean. And these archaean use chemical reactions to get their energy from the minerals. The minerals that are released by the vents. So their energy comes from chemical reactions, not sunlight.
So chemosynthesis is getting their energy from chemicals.
That's right.
That makes archaean very different from other forms of life.
And their genetic makeup is very different too. They are one sort of organisms just like bacteria are, but genetically they are as different from bacteria as we humans are.
Wow. That's a really interesting project.
Questions 19 to 22 are based on the conversation you have just heard.
Question 19. What is the woman's project mainly about? Question 20. According to the woman, where are the hydrothermal vents found? Question 21. What does the woman imply about archaean? Question 22. Besides their source of energy, what is a major difference between archaean and bacteria?
Conversation 2.
Excuse me, I've been using this old book for a research project, and I noticed that a lot of pages are turning brown and becoming brittle.
Yes, unfortunately, that's a common problem with books made from wood pulp.
I suppose to make paper from wood that you have to add a lot of chemicals and acids to make it turn white.
Exactly, and it's the acid that eventually eats away the paper.
Oh, that actually makes sense. But this book's not even 75 years old. And I've seen books in museums that are hundreds of years old, and they're in fine condition.
Well, you see, books have been made from wood pulp only since the 1850s. Before that, they were mostly made from materials like animal skins, and no chemicals were added.
It's a shame those older wood pulp books are going to fall apart someday. Is there anything that can be done to preserve them?
Currently, the only way to stop the books from decaying is to remove the binding and treat each page individually to remove the acid.
That doesn't sound very economical.
No, it isn't. It's not practical to treat a large number of books with this process. So, we only try to rescue the most valuable first edition books in our collection.
Well, thanks for the explanation. I'd better get back to my project.
Good luck, and I hope the old book holds together long enough for you to finish it.
Questions 23 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard.
Question 23. What are the speakers mainly discussing? Question 24. According to the man, why do modern books decay? Question 25. What does the man say about books published before 1850?
Section B.
Passage 1.
Throughout history, people have been interested in knowing how language first began, but no one knows exactly where and how this happened. However, we do know a lot about the languages of today and also the languages of earlier times. There are probably about 3,000 languages in the world today. Chinese is the language with the most speakers. English, Hindi, Urdu, Russian, and Spanish are also spoken by millions of people. On the other hand, some languages have less than 100 speakers. There are several important families of languages in the world. For example, most of the languages of Europe are in one large family called Indo-European. The original language of this family was spoken about 4,500 years ago. Many of the present-day languages of Europe and India are modern forms of it. Languages are always changing. The English of today is very different from the English of 500 years ago. In time, some even die out completely. About 1,000 years ago, English was a little-known relative of German, spoken on one of the borders of Europe.
Questions 26 to 28 are based on the passage you have just heard.
Question 26. How many languages are spoken in the world today? Question 27. What do we learn about the Indo-European language family? Question 28. What is the passage mainly about?
Passage 2.
Christmas is America's most popular holiday. Some people attend church and observe Christmas as the birthday of Christ. For others, Christmas is just a day of fun and celebration, a time for family and friends to get together, exchange gifts, and enjoy a huge holiday dinner. During the last days of November, American homes and stores begin to be decorated with Christmas trees and bright lights. Schools and churches prepare special holiday concerts. People go to parties, buy fine gifts, and prepare special Christmas food. Some people criticize Christmas. They say it is not religious enough. They say the holiday has become such big business that Americans forget it was created to honor the birth of Christ. It is true that people spend a lot of money during the holiday season. Store owners expect to get from 60 to 70% of their yearly earnings during the month before Christmas. Defenders of Christmas, however, point out that Americans also do many special things to help each other at Christmas time. One international organization assists more than 2.5 million people in the United States each Christmas. The organization gives out toys, warm clothing, food, and many other kinds of aid.
Questions 29 to 31 are based on the passage you have just heard.
Question 29. When do Americans begin their Christmas activities? Question 30. According to the passage, which of the following statements is not the reason why Christmas is criticized? Question 31. According to the passage, what do Americans also do at Christmas time?
Passage 3.
Some people have very good memories and can easily learn quite long poems by heart. There are other people who can only remember things when they have said them over and over again. The famous English writer Charles Dickens said that he could walk down any long street in London and then tell you the name of every shop he had passed. Many of the great men of the world have had wonderful memories. A good memory is a great help in learning a language. Everybody learns his own language by remembering what he hears when he is a small child, and some children seem to learn two languages almost as easily as one. In school, it is not so easy to learn a second language because the pupils have so little time for it, and they are busy with other subjects as well. A man's mind is rather like a camera, but it takes photos not only of what we see, but of what we feel, hear, smell, and taste. When we take a real photo with a camera, there is much to do before the photo is finished and ready to show to our friends. In the same way, there is much work to be done before we can keep a picture forever in our minds.
Questions 32 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard.
Question 32. What can some people do if they have very good memories, according to the passage? Question 33. Why is it difficult for pupils to learn a second language in school? Question 34. What is man's mind like, according to the passage? Question 35. What is a great help in learning a language?
Section C. Now listen to the passage.
There are two types of people in the world. Although they have equal degrees of health and wealth and other comforts of life, one becomes happy, the other becomes miserable. This arises from the different ways in which they consider things, persons, and events, and the resulting effects upon their minds. People who are to be happy fix their attention on the conveniences of things, the pleasant parts of conversation, and the fine weather. They enjoy all the cheerful things. Those who are to be unhappy think and speak only of the contrary things. Therefore, they are continually discontented. By their remarks, they sour the pleasures of society, offend many people, and make themselves disagreeable everywhere. If this turn of mind were found in nature, such unhappy persons would be the more to be pitied. The tendency to criticize and be disgusted is perhaps taken up originally by imitation. It grows into a habit unknown to its possessors. The habit may be strong, but it may be cured when those who have it are convinced of its bad effects on their interests and tastes. I hope this little warning may be of service to them and help them change this habit. Although, in fact, it is chiefly an act of the imagination, it has serious consequences in life, since it brings on deep sorrow and bad luck.
Now the passage will be read again.
There are two types of people in the world. Although they have equal degrees of health and wealth and other comforts of life, one becomes happy, the other becomes miserable. This arises from the different ways in which they consider things, persons, and events, and the resulting effects upon their minds. People who are to be happy fix their attention on the conveniences of things, the pleasant parts of conversation, and the fine weather. They enjoy all the cheerful things. Those who are to be unhappy think and speak only of the contrary things. Therefore, they are continually discontented. By their remarks, they sour the pleasures of society, offend many people, and make themselves disagreeable everywhere. If this turn of mind were founded in nature, such unhappy persons would be the more to be pitied. The tendency to criticize and be disgusted is perhaps taken up originally by imitation. It grows into a habit, unknown to its possessors. The habit may be strong, but it may be cured when those who have it are convinced of its bad effects on their interests and tastes. I hope this little warning may be of service to them and help them change this habit. Although in fact it is chiefly an act of the imagination, it has serious consequences in life since it brings on deep sorrow and bad luck.
Now the passage will be read for the third time.
There are two types of people in the world. Although they have equal degrees of health and wealth and other comforts of life, one becomes happy, the other becomes miserable. This arises from the different ways in which they consider things, persons, and events, and the resulting effects upon their minds. People who are to be happy fix their attention on the conveniences of things, the pleasant parts of conversation, and the fine weather. They enjoy all the cheerful things. Those who are to be unhappy think and speak only of the contrary things. Therefore they are continually discontented. By their remarks they sour the pleasures of society, offend many people, and make themselves disagreeable everywhere. If this turn of mind were found in nature, such unhappy persons would be the more to be pitied. The tendency to criticize and be disgusted is perhaps taken up originally by imitation. It grows into a habit unknown to its possessors. The habit may be strong, but it may be cured when those who have it are convinced of its bad effects on their interests and tastes. I hope this little warning may be of service to them and help them change this habit. Although in fact it is chiefly an act of the imagination, it has serious consequences in life, since it brings on deep sorrow and bad luck.
This is the end of listening comprehension.
College English Test, Band 4.
Model Test 9.
Part 3. Listening comprehension.
Section A.
Question 11.
Mary missed her class again, didn't she?
Well, she went to the 10 o'clock lecture that lasted for 1 hour, but she left when it was half over.
When did Mary leave? Question 12. I'm looking forward to the sunny day that the forecast has been predicting.
If all goes well, we'll also have some time to enjoy it for a change.
What does the man imply about the weather?
Question 13. I understand that the extra mathematics course this semester is outstanding.
It used to be, but now Professor Paulson has retired.
What does the woman imply?
Question 14. Should I lock the language lab now before I go home?
Don't bother. I'll check it by myself later.
What will the woman probably do?
Question 15. Are you going to the movies tonight?
Only if I finish all my reading assignments first.
What does the woman's reply suggest? Question 16. Most people agree that Lily looks exactly like her Aunt Rose.
Don't you think she takes more after her father?
What does the woman mean?
Question 17. I certainly hope the library will be open this Saturday.
The sign says library hours, weekdays 8 a.m., and on Saturdays 9 to 5, closed Sundays.
When will the library be open on Saturday? Question 18. Did you get the part you wanted in the play?
That role was given to someone else, but I got a better part.
How does the man probably feel?
Now you'll hear two long conversations.
Conversation 1. Okay, as you all know, tomorrow we're going to the museum to see a special exhibit of Screamshore carvings. So today, I'd like to take a few minutes to talk about the article on Screamshore you read for today's class. Let me start by asking exactly what is Screamshore?
Well, basically, it's a kind of artwork that was done by sailors on whaling ships.
When there weren't any whales around, there might not be much for the sailors to do, and they often got pretty bored.
So to entertain themselves, they started carving stuff on whale bones and whale teeth.
Okay, so basically the term screamshore refers to the artwork that sailors created, usually out of whale bones and whale teeth. Can you give me an example of something that sailors might have carved?
Well, for one thing, I remember reading that they carved things that could be used around the house, you know? Cooking and sewing utensils, that kind of stuff.
Good.
You know, I noticed from the pictures in the article that some of the carvings have really detailed images on them. Like they have some pretty sophisticated pictures of famous people and historical themes and stuff like that. And I was wondering just how they did that.
That's a very good question, and it brings us your assignment for tomorrow. While at the museum, I'd like each of you to take some notes on the various techniques used in making Screamshore so that we can discuss them when we come back to class.
Questions 19 to 22 are based on the conversation you have just heard.
Question 19. What is the purpose of the discussion? Question 20. From what material was Screamshore usually made? Question 21. According to the discussion, why did sailors begin making Screamshore? Question 22. According to the discussion, what was done with the Screamshore object?